Now more than ever. Lowe's knows you don't just want a low price. You want the lowest price. And with our lowest price guarantee, you can count on us for competitive prices on all your home improvement projects. If you find a qualifying lower price somewhere else on the same item, we'll match it. Lowe's. We help. You save. Price match applies to same item. Current price at qualifying retailers. Exclusions and terms apply. Learn how we'll match price at lowes.com/lowest price guarantee.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
Get ready for July 4th with early savings at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Karen Reed.
John O'Keefe was 46 years old. 46 years old. He spent his life helping people. He's described as a good man, kind, generous, thoughtful. He was a Boston police officer. He worked to help the community. Everything you've heard about this man, he was a good man. He helped people. When his niece and nephew had nobody, he took them in. He took them in. John O'Keefe seemed to be the type of person who would help anybody at any time. And on January 29, 2022, John O'Keefe needed some help. He needed help from somebody else. You see, John O'Keefe had just been hit by Karen Reed in front of 34 Fairview Road, and he lay on the ground dying. And he needed help. Someone to reach out a hand. Someone to knock on a door. Someone to make a phone call to 911, even anonymously. Not take responsibility, just to help. And there was only one person in this entire planet who could help him that morning, to give him a chance. Maybe it was a 33% chance if he met the Isaac Wolf of the world. But to give him a chance. And that one person who could help him that morning was this defendant right here, Karen Lee. And she made a decision. In her Lexus with the shattered taillight, debris filled all over the front yard, and John O'Keefe lying helpless like a child on the front yard, she made a choice. She didn't call 911. She didn't run to his aid. She didn't knock on a door. She made a decision about herself. In her Lexus, she drove away. She was drunk. She hit him, and she left him to die. She was drunk. She hit him, and she left him to die. Before I go through and detail the evidence, let's talk a little bit about the evidence as a whole. She was drunk. She was drinking that night. She was drinking McCarthy's with John. She was drinking at the waterfall. Her blood was taken with samples of a retrograde analysis, almost 2 to 3 times the legal limit. She was drunk. She hit him. The timeline in this case is beyond dispute. You can accuse, assault, characterize, malign, twist. The timeline doesn't change. It is data. Data is data. The black box, the forensics from the SD card, we know exactly step by step where they were. We know in that window she hits him because he never moves again. His healthcare data, the temperature on the battery of the cell phone, the physical evidence, the debris field, the DNA, the hair. And then she left him to die. He had a basal skull fracture, countercoup. You heard all about it when the back of your head hits the ground and the brain comes forward. Dr. Wolf told us the reason why they have level one trauma centers around the country is because people can survive this injury if they get help. That's why they have this care. That's why they have these hospitals. But you gotta get help. You gotta get help. And if you don't, you develop symptoms, ecchymosis, raccoon eyes, your brain swells, and you die. She was drunk. And that night was a recipe for disaster. But before we get to the drinking, in some ways, the fate of this night was sealed well before that night, because John O'Keefe and Karen Reed were in a toxic relationship. This relationship was crumbling. We hear lovey-dovey, and it was crumbling, and we know it. And we know it because a month before, his niece Kaylee talks about when they went to Aruba. It should have been a wonderful event. It was discord. It was fighting. It was aggravation. And when they got back, the discontent was palpable. Miss Reed reaches out to Brian Higgins, text messaging, John O'Keefe. The relationship is crumbling. And you heard a little bit about what that relationship was like. Kaylee, his niece, told you when there was an argument, John would do what John does. He would walk away. She described to you one time to get away from the scene, he walked into his bedroom. But the defendant wouldn't let it go, pounding on his door, having to get the last word, never letting go of the fight. Kind of mirrors what happens on January 29, 2022. And maybe outwards of Paris, they got along. Maybe sometimes quietly they got along. But behind closed doors, relationships have up and downs. We have a bird's eye view into the relationship on January 28, 2022, because we have the text messages. Not so lovey-dovey. The relationship is almost over. The tensions are simmering beneath the surface. They are not getting along. She believes Mr. Keefe is already halfway out of the relationship and he's not into it anymore. You will read them, you saw them. This relationship was unstable and at its end. And so fast forward that night. That night, after this discord, after the arguing, they go out and what do? They drink. And they drink a lot. Mr. O'Keefe drinks a lot, and Karen Reed drinks a lot. You've seen the McCarthy videos. You can call it 6, 7, 8, whatever you want to call it. You can see the shots into the mixed drinks. More shots into mixed drinks. Count them yourself. Over a half dozen mixed drinks in just a few hours. Sober? And then at the waterfall, a shot, a mixed drink. Now, it was brought up the waterfall that there was some type of discord between Brian Higgins and John O'Keefe. They knew each other. They were friends. Brian Higgins' conduct of speaking to Karen Reed was not honorable. It's not. But they were friendly. There was no adversarial relationship. There was no anger between them. What we heard is they barely greeted each other. Could we have slide one, please? At the waterfall bar, when you see John O'Keefe come in, here's him barely greeting him. That's him and Mr. Higgins, barely greeting each other. Reality sometimes is different than argument. This is a celebratory move. Take that down, please. Celebratory move. A bunch of friends. They're playing around. They're hugging. They're grappling. This is a fighting technique for a murder 2 hours later. Is that the story? They're practicing their moves to murder John O'Keefe. In the celebratory mood, you don't see any aggravation or animus between Brian Higgins and John O'Keefe. Inevitably, the next morning, Karen Reed is brought to the hospital and they take her blood. Now, the government doesn't have to prove that she was drunk. It is either that she's over the legal limit, 0.08, or she had enough alcohol to affect her ability to operate a motor vehicle safely, but you will know that she was far beyond the legal limit. After the retrograde analysis, almost 2 to 3 times the legal limit. Almost 2 to 3 times the legal limit. Now, it's been intimated, not come out and said, that maybe she went home and started drinking after she got home. No evidence, mind you, no evidence. And that somehow that is why she had a high blood alcohol level. It's not appropriate for me to comment on the credibility of another attorney's argument, so I won't do that. But Karen Reed will do that for her. So if we listen to slide 2, she'll tell you exactly what she thinks about that claim.
My alcohol intake's probably about 5 or 6 or 4. The drinks that they reported at McCarthy's, which is where I consumed most of the alcohol, was the weakest spot in time. It tasted just like old soda water with blue lime.
Slide 3, please.
I wouldn't have gotten on the expressway. I wouldn't have gotten on the expressway at 12:15 on January 29th. I mean, it was quiet. The roads were very quiet. You can see on the videos. And I was going, you know, when I had a few drinks in my driveway, it was very extra slopes. And go my alerts aren't as sharp as they should be. But I
shouldn't
be driving.
Thank you. You think she drank when she got home? When they leave the waterfall bar at 12:12, you see a video, you have it in evidence. There's a still photo of John O'Keefe holding a glass. Not from the Alberts' home. He didn't sneak into the house in the cupboards and grab a glass. From the waterfall, you see him with a glass, and in it is a straw. Take a look at that picture. And now from 12:12 on, we virtually have a historian in the data that tells us exactly where he went, exactly step by step where he went. And how do we have that? Well, we know the defendant's car had like a black box, and Judd Welcher, Dr. Judd Welcher, Doug Welcher, took the data from the black box and downloaded it so you can see the movements and the triggering events. And then Shannon Burgess, well, you don't like what he says, don't attack the data, attack the man. He can be mocked for his LinkedIn profile or his unupdated CV. But what he did is he found a key critical piece of this case that did not exist before. He found it recently, and it was that SD card. The SD card that everybody missed, including the defense expert. Everybody missed it. So as much as you want to make fun of him, Shannon Welcher found the key so that we could have the time and date and location coordinated for an impenetrable timeline that can't be broken. That's what Shannon Burgess did. And so we know on the way from the waterfall to 34 Fairview, Ms. Reed is driving drunk. Mr. O'Keefe is in the passenger side of the car, and they're heading their way to 34 Fairview, and they get lost. And now we have more data because John O'Keefe has a cell phone. And I said this in the beginning, it is a historian. It doesn't suffer from bias, it doesn't suffer from prejudice, it doesn't suffer from memory loss. It has data on it. And he puts on Waze, high location data, as Ian Whiff would say. And it tells you second by second the speed, the location, the movement. That's what it does. And he has healthcare data on that phone. The healthcare data separately shows his movement. And that is critical. It is critical because it not only shows his movement, it shows when he does not move. That healthcare data is critical. And it's not subject to bias. It's not in dispute. There's no other contrary evidence. It is data. On the way to 34 Fairview, alcohol fuels tension. We know that. And we know from those text messages the tension in that relationship, and then there's a trigger. There is a trigger on the way because they're lost. And when John O'Keefe calls Jen McCabe for directions, Jen McCabe says something that triggers what's going to happen next. Could I slide four, please?
Very close to the outbursts. In fact, when Jen was navigating John to the outbursts when I was driving, she said it's near Ashley's house. Ashley and John hooked up prior to John and I'm dating.
And so as they travel to 34 Fairview, under the duress of this crumbling relationship, fueled by intoxication, we have triggers. Now, we know on their way there, we know from the data, where they went, how they moved. If we look at slide five, Ian Whiffen showed you a guide. You could enlarge that just a little, please. And it shows you, with the healthcare data, it registers as flights climbed, but it doesn't mean someone's climbing upstairs. What it means is there's an elevation, and he breaks down the data, the red, the green, if you could move down, please, Ms. Gilman. And then in the bottom left, that's 34 Fairview. You can see, second by second, the circles of their route, even the three-point turn on Cedar Crest. That's what you see. At that point, they've left the bar. Remember, the battery temperature was 82 degrees. They're now in a car. It's now 77 degrees. Think about how accurate the battery temperature is, that it reflects the difference between being in a bar and being in a car. They take a three-point turn at Cedar Crest. And because of Shannon Burgess and because of Judd Welcher, we have the data, and it's a triggering event. Remember, if there's an acceleration past 30%, it registers data on the car, and that's exactly what happens. There's a three-point turn, and it all lines up with the cell phone after you synchronize the times. It's that simple. It's nothing complicated. There's nothing tricky. There's nothing devious about it. It's data. They do the three-point turn, and you can match the cell phone clock with the Lexus clock, and when you do, you can reconcile the difference. Now, there's been a lot of talk, a lot of argument, a lot of fights. Shannon Burgess says 21 to 29 seconds. Mr. DeSorger comes in. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to actually do anything. He wasn't given the invitation to test the data. He just looked at the report and made criticisms like a Monday morning quarterback. But even he, looking at the data, says, well, it's 3 seconds off or 2 seconds. Same window, same time, can have all the arguments we want. They're there, they're together, the data matches up perfectly, perfectly. And so they make their way down to 34 Fairview Road. They don't stop. They don't stop at the driveway. They don't stop and John O'Keefe gets out of the car. They go to the flagpole, and we know for two reasons. One, the data. And secondly, Mr. Nagel and Ms. Mason at Cedar Crest, at that intersection before it goes down to the right, they meet, they let Karen Reed go first, they fall behind in the truck. Now, at this point, Mr. O'Keefe has about 8 more minutes before the beginning of the end of his life. And he's in that car. He's in that car for most of it. Because Ms. Mason and Mr. Nagel don't see anybody get out of the truck. Nobody crosses the lawn. Nobody goes to a garage. Not just because they didn't see it, and they didn't. Not because they didn't see it. Because the healthcare data on the phone shows that John O'Keefe is not moving. The car is stopped at the flagpole. The healthcare data stops. The battery stays at 77 degrees. The data is the data. You can't change it as much as you want to. It's data. And they sit at that flagpole for minutes. It's 12, 24, 33 when they get there. They're there past 12:30. Remember, Ms. Mason and Ms. Nagel said they were there about 5 minutes and then they go. It's not exact, but about 5 minutes, they said. So there's about 2 minutes left for John O'Keefe. And what are they doing in those 2 minutes? What are the last 2 minutes of his life that he can remember that would be open to him? They're arguing. They're arguing, they're arguing. And we know they're arguing because Ms. Reed tells us through first responder Becker. She was sad. Remember, he sees her in the back of the ambulance and he's trying to calm her down? She was sad because her last moments were arguing. They're in an argument. That's why they're not going in the house. But John O'Keefe decides to get out of the car. And we know because the dome light goes on. That's what happens when you open a door. Whether he's bent down, he's standing outside, or on the other side, the dome light is on. And then you see the data. John O'Keefe begins to move. 12:31:56. It's the first time he has moved since they got to the flagpole, and it will be the last time he moves in his life. And he moves for 20 seconds. Ian Whiffen said that the satellites, they move, they reconnect, they pull information. He's no longer on high frequency data because waves are shut off. Now it's more random, it's low frequency. We would never suggest, and Mr. Whiffen did not claim, based on location data alone at that point, you can tell exactly where John O'Keefe is. What he said is there was readings all night. The bullet is always near the flagpole. That doesn't mean he was always near the flagpole. He could have moved. He could have moved in the circles and come back. Location data is consistent with him never leaving the flagpole. But that in itself is not enough. But there's more. There is more. There is the healthcare data. There is the temperature of the cell phone battery. And so he moves for 20 seconds. It turns west. It does not say he walks to the house. That's not what the data says. It doesn't say that he goes straight line and he walks over to the door. In fact, could he even get to the door in 75 feet? Could he get there? Because when the investigator for the defense testified, he measures from the driveway. He never stopped at the driveway. He never measures from the flagpole. He never measures from the flagpole to the garage door. So this fantasy that somehow he walked in the garage, even though there's no evidence, there's no witness, there's no data. 20 seconds of his life, and he moves. And healthcare data registers his steps. It could be pacing, it could be a straight line, it could be shaking the phone. We don't know. We don't know. We don't know everything. We don't know every little detail and every little second. We don't have to. That's not doubt. That's not reasonable doubt. We know for that 20 seconds he's moving. And in that 20 second window, when he moves, he has his phone and he looks down, 12:32:09, he sees a text message from his friend, Jemma Cade. And he looks at the text message, And he closes it. And then it happens. We know from the uncontroverted data from that black box, we know that Karen Reed, after he gets out of the car, drives away. She drives for at least 33 feet away from him. He's back near the flagpole, she's gone. It's over. Whatever argument is over. Whatever anger and flame has been dispassioned, she's moved on. He's separate from her. He's safe. And then she makes a decision. That's what this case is about. Then she makes a decision. She could have driven home. She could have broken up with him. They could have talked about it the next day. Or like knocking on the door, like Kaylee said, getting the last word. She doesn't drive away. She takes that 6,000-pound Lexus, and she makes a decision. And the decision is that she steps on the gas after banging it into reverse. Before we talk about what happens next, I want to talk to you a little bit about the charges in this case. And I hate to digress, but it's important so we really understand what we're talking about here. I have no authority to talk about the law in this case. The Honorable Judge Cannoni will do that. But I want to talk to you a little bit about the charges. Don't rely on my interpretation of the law. It's the judge who has that special power. But I want to explain to you a couple of things so when you think about what happens next, you can really assess the facts of this case with the charges against Ms. Reed. She is charged with second-degree murder. It sounds ominous. It is. It's a serious charge, second-degree murder. When most people think murder, they think shooting or stabbing somebody. It's natural to think that. Second-degree murder is different. It's not first-degree murder. I told you at the beginning of this case, I told you that we were not going to suggest or try to prove that Ms. Reed intended to kill John O'Keefe. That was never part of this case. We're not claiming that. I told you that we were not ever going to try to prove that she even intended to hit him. We never suggested we would try to prove that, and we're not trying to prove that she intended to hit him. We're not. What we are obligated to prove and what we have proven from the evidence in this case of second-degree murder is that she intended an act, and that is putting the car into reverse and heading back towards John O'Keefe. She intended that act. The question then becomes, did her conduct create a clear, plain, strong likelihood of death? Late at night, dark, beginning to snow, under the influence of alcohol, knowing where she stopped and left him after an argument, heading back in reverse to the exact spot or right near where she left him at over 24 miles per hour, accelerating at over 75%. You need to ask yourself, are you convinced if somebody does that, does that create a plain and strong likelihood of death? And if there's no doubt in your mind that she intended to hit that accelerator in reverse, and that that conduct will create a clear and plain likelihood of death, then she is guilty of that crime. Whatever the label is, she would be guilty of that crime. Now think about this. Let me give you an analogy. If somebody, maybe a teenager, someone young, impulsive, is on a bridge, and they see cars going by, and they have a boulder, and they want to throw the boulder off, they're not looking to hurt anybody. They're not meaning to kill anybody, but they throw the boulder off the bridge because they want to see the car break, the thrill. And when they throw that boulder off the bridge, and it comes down and lands on the car, and there's somebody, passenger, child, anybody in that car, and it then goes through the roof and kills the person in the car, did they intend to kill that person? No, they were trying to have a thrill throwing the rock. Did they have the malice to want that person dead? No, they didn't. But that would be an example of second-degree murder. When you take a boulder and throw it off a bridge, there's a plain and strong likelihood of death. When Karen Reed, in the midst of that tension and fight, after she drove away and was gone, disengaged, when she came back for the last word, in the darkness, the beginning of the snow, under the influence of alcohol, and decided to stop her Lexus, decided to put it in reverse, decided to accelerate 75% in the exact same direction of where she left him, and then hit him, and he died. I suggest to you that is second degree murder. The other charge, operating under the influence of alcohol, manslaughter. It's different. It's a totally different and separate charge. Was she under the influence of alcohol? And then secondly, did she operate her Lexus wantonly and recklessly in a way that would very likely result in serious injury? When you're under the influence of alcohol and you drive a 6,000-pound Lexus in the heat of the moment at the direction of where somebody is, whether you intend to hit them or not, I submit to you that is wanton, it is reckless. And any reasonable person would think it's very likely that serious injury would result. It's not a matter of intending to kill. It's not a matter of intending to hit. It is the conduct of the operation and the risk that is created. And so those two charges are two of the three. The three is leaving the scene, knowingly causing death. And we'll get to that. So now, sadly, we need to get back to 34 Fairview Road where we left. We know from the Techstream data that she drove 33 feet at least, because it only picks up a 10-second window. And when it starts to pick up the data, we know she's driving at a speed. So it's more than 33 feet. We just don't know. And then when she comes back, she covers the 33 feet and 50 more. 80 feet, over 80 feet. Now, nobody has ever suggested, even Dr. Welcher, when she collided with them. This data doesn't tell you collision. It's a 6,000-pound Lexus. It's a 216-pound man. It's not going to show a blip. It could have been in that 10-second window. It could have been 2 seconds after. It could have been 4 seconds after. But it's in that pocket of time, and we know it. We know it because when you reconcile the data with the phone, that 20 seconds is in the same window of that 10-second window coming back. So even if it's a couple seconds later, 4 seconds later, whatever Mr. DeSorbo wants, he stops moving. John O'Keefe stops moving forever. Forever. Next slide, six, please. You'll get to see this more closely, and you can probably see it where you're sitting, but there's important data. Data doesn't lie. And you will see acceleration, 75%. You will see speed, 24 miles per hour backwards. You will see distance, over 80 feet. That's what you're going to see in this data on that night. Anger, although not necessary in any of these charges, anger can be inferred. For somebody to come back that hard, that fast, that reckless, that obvious, likely to create a plain and strong likelihood of death. That data tells a story that can't be changed, can't be attacked. ARCA, they did some crash test dummies. You know what else they do? Techstream data. There's nothing about that data that is uncertain. Nothing. Could you take that down, please? When Ms. Reed hits John O'Keefe, collides with John O'Keefe, we don't know if he went in the air a foot, we don't know if it was how much of a clip it was, we don't know if he stumbled back, but we know there's a collision. There's no doubt there's a collision because her taillight's all over the yard. it's all over the yard. And when he falls back and he hits the back of his head, his basal fracture, he's then lying there helpless. When Miss Reed leaves, she leaves behind tons of her taillight all over the yard. All over the yard. It's called debris field. And you've seen videos. You can't replicate the exact contact. You can't, because you need where the person was hit, how fast the person was going, but you know what happened, because when you look at the debris field, when a light is broken, it's no different than what was on the front yard. It's no different. She leaves him behind. She leaves her taillight behind. She goes home. And on her way home, you know she's still angry. You know she's still angry because she starts leaving him voicemails. Slide 7, please. Healthcare starts at 12:31:56. 12:32:04 to 12:32:12 is the data, which is adjusted when you reconcile the Fox and the Lexus. 12:32:09 is when Mr. O'Keefe closes his phone after looking at Jen McCabe's text. 12:32:16 is his last steps. Mr. DeSorte says that red range should move a little bit, 2 or 3 seconds. They can move it 4 seconds, 5 seconds. It doesn't matter. It's all in the same window. It doesn't change. If we could have slide 10, please. Can you play that, please? Thank you. Each one of those pegs represents 10 feet. You can't place that car where it was in front of Fairview. You just can't. The data doesn't tell you that, but that tells you the movements of that car. Now, as John O'Keefe sadly lays on the ground, abandoned, you're going to have to ask yourself a question for charge number 3, leaving scene, knowing somebody was injured and then died. You're going to have to ask yourself, is there evidence that Miss Reed knew that she had hit him? Don't need to prove it for murder 2. Don't need to prove it for OUI manslaughter. But for the 3rd charge, Commonwealth has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt she knew she hit him. We weren't there, but there was an eyewitness. There was a guide. And that eyewitness tells us that she knew. And that eyewitness is Karen Reed herself. She tells you that she knew. Could we have slide 8, please?
Could I have hit him? Did I hit him?
How could that have been?
I don't know what could have been. It was howling wind. I had YouTube blasting on the stereo. And I thought, did he somehow try to flag me down, which was the reaction I was hoping to garner as I slowly pulled away from the house? Did he come up and maybe trip or bend over to pick up his cell phone and I ran over his foot and then passed out drunk? I mean, I didn't think I...
When she left Fairview and left John behind, she didn't think he was mortally wounded. But she knew she hit him. She knew she hit him. And so when she made her way back home, not only did she leave debris field all over the front lawn, but she took evidence with her too. Hair, DNA on the taillight, and she drove back to John's house, and she started calling on the way back, 12:33, just a minute and a half later, and then her messages show her anger. You see, this was John's fault. This was John's fault. And her phone calls tell you about the tone and the destruction of that relationship. 53 phone calls that night. 53 phone calls. Not one to 911. Not one to Jen McCabe, please go outside and try to help. Not one to a hospital. Not one to anybody but him. 53 calls. Slide 12, please. Can you play voicemail one, please?
John, I fucking hate you!
The calls keep coming. Cell phone temperature, 72 degrees. He's been outside now, not moving, on that cold, hard ground with his cell phone under him. The warmth of his body, the cold ground, 72 degrees. It tells you the story. As this temperature plummets and that cell phone battery is compromised, so is John O'Keefe. And him and his cell phone alone on that yard. 66 degrees at 1245. It is plummeting. Ian Whiffen's taking a phone and putting it in a freezer, not a same analogy. The idea that means that John O'Keefe went in the house, absurd. 66 turns to 61 at 1253. 48 unanswered calls from the defendant. He's not in at a party. He's not wrestling with Brian Higgins. He's not in a fight. If he's in a fight, his cell phone would be moving. There'd be healthcare data. There'd be steps. If he got into the house in 20 seconds and his cell phone is found under his body the next day, and how would he get back outside? There would be more steps. Because this phone is working. The data is the data. There's nothing wrong with it. It's registering everything. The temperature, the movement. He doesn't go in any house. He can't go in any house. His phone never moves again. Voicemail number three, please. Listen to this.
John, I'm the only fucking kid. Nobody knows what the fuck you want, fucking pervert.
Did you hear that? Nobody knows where you are. It is 12:59. John O'Keefe has been on that lawn for about 27 minutes. She hasn't called anybody else, hasn't spoken, has no information. Nobody's called her. You'll see her phone records. And she says, nobody knows where you are? She knows. She knows. Nobody does know where he is. Except her. Except her. Why is she asking nobody knows who you are? She is starting to get panicked. Because she knows she hit him. Not suggesting she meant to kill him. Or for him to die. But she knows she hit him. And now he's not responding. And she's getting nervous. And she's getting anxious. And she's leaving call after call after call. He's not answering. He's not calling back. He's not even picking up the phone. And we know what's happening at this point. Panic, drunken denial, it's setting in. And so then we see the healthcare data from Ms. Reed's phone. She doesn't move after a little after 1 o'clock. She could be sitting, she could have fallen asleep, but she doesn't move for a while. But she wakes up. She wakes up early the next morning. You can take that down, please. And when she wakes up, she doesn't call Jen McCabe and say, where's John? She doesn't call Brian Higgins. Has his number, has been texting with him. Hey, was John at a party with you? Did you see John tonight? She knows exactly where she is, and she's frantic. So she wakes up Kaylee, that young girl at the time, and she says she's panicked. She can't understand where she's saying. Call Jen McCabe. Call Jen McCabe. Why is she calling Jen McCabe? She calls Jen McCabe. You know what she doesn't say when she calls Jen McCabe? When did he leave the house? What happened last night? No. She calls and says, I left him at the waterfall. I left him at the waterfall. See, now it's gone from panicked to self-preservation. I left him at the waterfall. And Jen says, left him at the waterfall? We saw you in front of the house. Click. Hangs up. So then she calls someone that she doesn't know very well. She calls Kerry Roberts. But now she has to pivot because someone has seen her in the exact spot that John will be found soon. Whether she's the first one there or somebody else, John will be found. Maybe Lucky missed him. It's a snowstorm. You can't see. But someone's going to find him at some point. So she calls Kerry Roberts. It's no longer she left him at the waterfall. She pivots. And she calls, Carrie, Carrie, Carrie. John's dead. I think he got hit by a plow. Why do you think she chose those words? Why did she choose those words? Because she knew that there was a collision with a large motor vehicle, and she had to substitute her 6,000-pound Lexus for another big vehicle. I think he got hit by a plow. And so now we have the introduction of Jen McCabe and Kerry Roberts. Phone calls that they probably never, ever wanted. A worse nightmare to get a call like that for what's going to happen, what they're going to see, what they'll never be able to forget. But because the defendant is John O'Keefe's girlfriend, they wake up in the middle of the night in a blizzard. Out of their kindness, their loyalty, their devotion to John O'Keefe. And when she calls them and tells them that she wants them to come out, this soccer mom, with a perfectly normal life, gets drawn into this whole farce, and she answers that call. She gets out of bed. The spirit and kindness she displays to put herself in that position because someone asked for help. Because that's what good people do. Kerry Roberts didn't know Jen McCabe. They both knew John. They met each other once years before. Kerry Roberts separately at that time answers the call, gets out of bed, drives to go help because they have a common denominator, a common bond, John O'Keefe. And so you hear and see at 5:07, the defendant leaves Meadows. She leaves. And Kaylee is behind waiting. And you see her back up, and Judd Welch just showed you all of those demonstrations where you could see the unsettled snow in the back, and after the bump, you can see the pieces missing, no taillight. There's no taillight on the ground, all the white snow. There's no crack, there's no break. It's a nudge. It's a nudge. But the taillight has already been broken because when you look at the video, not one little piece, it's still framed, little angle with the light, the brakes are. You take a look, you'll be able to slow it down. You'll see the exact same piece is missing. Because it's back at Fairview. That's why it's missing. It's not there, it's back at Fairview. And then she leaves at 5:07. She gets to Jen McCabe's about, 5:35? 28 minutes. It's about a 10-minute ride. Where does she go in 28 minutes? Where does she go? We don't know. We don't have data for that. But we know when she gets to Jen McCabe's house, she is panicked, frantic, out of her mind, screaming, waking everybody up. Jen McCabe comes down, can't understand her, going out to the car to try to console her. Why is she so frantic? Why can't she speak? Why can't she say a word? Because John went out and had a drink and fell asleep on a couch? Because John would maybe be cheating on her? What is causing this extraordinary duress? Did she stop somewhere on the way by? Did she just see death? Kerry Roberts comes, take charge kind of person. She pulls him behind. She sees the broken taillight in Jen McCabe's driveway. And she decides she's going to commandeer this. We're going to back to Meadows. You're going to follow me. Leave the car. I'll drive. At this point, Jen and Kerry don't know each other. They've only met once. And they go back to Meadows. They obviously don't find John because he's back at 34 Fairview. And then they start their way towards 34 Fairview. They start driving towards 34 Fairview, and they're looking. And you heard from Kerry Roberts, Jen McCabe, they're looking out the window. They can't see a thing. The snow, the blizzard, the weather, the darkness, they can't see anything. And they're driving. And driving, and they decide they're going back to 34 Fairview, and this is remarkable. This is remarkable. When they start their way past towards 34 Fairview, they get close. And when they get close, they can see nothing. But the defendant screams, "Stop! Let me out!" And they look around and they say, "What? Let me out, let me out." She does not see John O'Keefe. She knows where he is. She knows exactly where he is. She knows where to find him. She knows where to expect to find him because she knows where she left him. She tells us. Slide 13, please.
Brian and Jen's in the passenger seat. And I've described this to everyone. So you probably know this before, but John looked like a buffalo on the prairie. It was just a lawn in a heap that it wasn't a bush or a hydrant or a dog. It was a weird shaped lump at that time in those elements. And I was looking to find him on the side of the road. I was expecting I'd find him.
Thank you. A weird shaped lump in a blizzard, and you equate that to John O'Keefe? A weird shaped lump, not like a bush, and that is John O'Keefe? She tells us she knows where she left John O'Keefe. And so they go over to Mr. O'Keefe, Kerry, and Karen. And she's upset, there's no doubt. I am not for a second trying to deprive her of the unrest and the trauma that is happening at his scene. Doesn't change what happened before, but I appreciate the trauma. And they're trying to help him. And guess what happens when they first move him around 603, 604? Ian Whiffen, Data. The cell phone battery gets the cool air, presses on the battery, the cell phone battery drops. Healthcare Data, he has not moved since that 22nd, hasn't moved. They start shaking him. You're gonna see, when you look at the records, that Healthcare Data starts to move. He's been there all night. All night. Nobody else. Her. And so when they try to help him, she says something that is remarkable. She says, there's a piece of glass stuck in his nose. And she plucks it out. And she says when she plucks it out, blood spurts out. And we'll talk about that in a couple minutes. Remember that. Piece of glass, pulls it out, blood spurts out. That's what she says. As they try to help John, Jen is calling 911. They would like you to believe there's a conspiracy. That the glass that's found in Mr. O'Keefe's body is somehow from inside the Albert House. The glass, well, you will hear in the clips, if we don't play it, you'll have all the clips with you. She talks about the fact that he took her walk. He took the glass. She says it. So the Albert House, they don't need to give glass. He already has the glass. With the straw that's later found on the street, by the way. That's what happens on an impact. Things move. The glass comes with him. Lands near his body. Debris field moves past him. Shoe, hat, straw. Jen McKay makes a call to her sister, and they say because it registers 29 seconds, a Cellbrite record is not the same as a call detail record. There is no evidence there was a conversation. No lights go on. There's no conspiracy. You can call somebody. It can ring. It can go to voicemail. They have no evidence, none, that there's a conversation between Jen McCabe, the person who was ripped out of her sleep to come help, and her sister for some grand conspiracy. And so what happens next is traumatic. Kerry Roberts and Jen McCabe see their best friend prone, lifeless, frozen, on the ground. And they're living this torment because somebody brought them into this. When they're trying to help John, there is not one suggestion from anybody that John ever went into that house. There's no reason to go into that house because John was never in the house. Not one time has anybody said, what time did he leave? I thought he went in there. Not even a whisper of it, because it never, ever happened. When they find their friend John, he's not 20 feet off the side of the road, like Mr. Rentschler or Mr. Wolf thinks. He's right there by the side of the road, close by the curb. Could we have slide 14, please? You can see there's Kerry Roberts' vehicle. And then on the left, you can see where they're working. Right off the road. That's not 20 feet.
That is a cook, a stubble, and a fall. Remember, when Velike fell, there wasn't snow. It was just the beginning of a dusting. It was the cold, hard ground. Remember what Dr. Isaac Wolf told us about cold, hard ground? Causes this type of injury all the time. All the time. If we could go to slide 16, please. Remember the glass in the nose? The glass in the nose. See on the bottom left, that's where the Canton Police Department found the glass that he took from the car, from the waterfall. And then exhibit 195, matching glass. On February 3rd, the matching piece of glass was found on the street. The matching piece of glass, the glass that was found with Mr. O'Keefe, was found on the street. He didn't fall back 8-10 feet from the road. It broke, and then it shattered and went to the street. I would suggest to you, it broke at the time of the collision, and he carried the glass with him, leaving the evidence behind, a trail to memorialize what happened to him that night. Remember the straw I asked you to take a look at that picture when we're leaving the waterfall at 12:12, the black straw in the drink on the street. Collision, glass, nose, straw, back, hits his head. Could you play the clip on the left, please? 59.
So when John got out of the car at Brian Albert's house, he took Michael.
One 69, please.
So John's laying there, left and his right, and I approached John from the left. That's where the street is. And he had a piece of glass, like, perched on his nose, like, just wedged like a splinter would be. And it just pulled it, and as soon as I pulled it, it just gushed blood down his face.
Thank you. 911's called by Jen McCabe. She's not hiding from anybody. She's trying to help. She's bringing attention to the situation. And when 911 comes, we have first responders. These people are heroes. Some of them, you've heard from some of them, they were born to help people. That's what their life is about. The detail on all their mechanics, getting to work 2 hours early in the middle of the blizzard so that you're there on time so you can help people. These are the core of our community. Mr. Nuttall, this is what he does. He rushes to go help. He's the first person on his knees. He doesn't know this person from anybody, but to him it's another human being. This is his passion. Katie McLaughlin, first responder. This is not just a profession, it's her life. Yes, she knows Caitlin Albert. Do you think she went there that night at a party and set up a murder and came back? And so they tell you what happens at the scene. Some things hard to remember, some things people will never forget. When you're in a traumatic incident, sometimes it's something you'll never, ever, ever forget. And Timothy Nuttall remembers speaking to the defendant. I hit him. Remember, he's on his knees. What happened? I hit him. She is now coming to terms with the moment. Her fear is realized. She hit him. She clipped him. She didn't think he was mortally wounded. She panicked. She can't come to terms with it, so she has to bring people with her to face it, and now she's facing the reality of what she had done. And her emotion is overwhelming. I hit him. She speaks to Miss McLaughlin. I hit him. Not did I hit him, could I hit him, perhaps I hit him, that was earlier. Now, she's recognizing what she did. I hit him. And these people are making it up. Anybody that says anything adverse, or inconsistent or inconvenient is a liar, or a perjurer, or in on a conspiracy? Or is it that these good people who went there for a total stranger to do their duty to help happen to remember that she admitted what she had done? I know that doesn't reconcile with the boogeyman Proctor and the bad government. I know it doesn't reconcile with no DNA on this piece or that piece. I know it doesn't reconcile with everybody setting up the girl. I know that doesn't reconcile. But the reality is, you have independent core people who hear her say, I hit him. And the attempt is to betray everybody as a liar. But you don't have to rely just on these good people, although you should. You should. You don't have to, because we have a guide, and it's Karen Reed. Slide 17.
Did I have it? I've always said I get it, but did I really say it as many times as law enforcement is claiming I said it?
Thank you. I know it doesn't fit the theme, the theory, the story, but she tells you herself. She endorses those good people exactly what they had heard. She tells you herself. She hit them. It's undeniable. It's unmistakable. It's inconvenient. But the truth has a way of seeping up to the daylight. It can be oppressed and suppressed and pushed down and covered and twisted, but it rises. It rises. And it is not a coincidence. There's no coincidence that Mr. Nuttall and Ms. McLaughlin hear exactly that. She tells you. And Jen McCabe, when she's sitting next to you or standing next to Ms. McLaughlin, she tells you that she saw or heard the same thing. Remember what happened to her on the stand when she had the audacity to say, I heard her say it? What happened to her? This woman who never even wanted to leave her home that day pulled out into a storm to see her best friend dead. What happened when she had the audacity to say that? And now we know that the defendant herself said the same thing. And the funny thing, the ironic thing is, you will see in a photo when Ms. McLaughlin, the firefighter, was speaking to the defendant, Ms. McCabe was next to her. Ms. McCabe was trying to protect her, trying to shut her up. Don't talk, you're upset, stop saying crazy things. The villain of this story was trying to help the defendant from incriminating herself. The irony. Could we have slide 9, please? This is the battery temperature. You're going to have a chance to look at it. If it wasn't so tragic, it is interesting. It is interesting if you like data. The 29, 12, 13, they're leaving the waterfall, 82 degrees, 1222, in the car, 77 degrees, 1237, about 3.5 minutes after the defendant collides with John O'Keefe. It started to go down, 72, 1245, 66, 1253, 61, and you see it drop and steady off at 1:36. Remember, cell phone battery under him, John O'Keefe either struggling for life or he's passed, and his blood's still warm either way, under him. Doesn't move again until 6:06. It drops down 7 degrees because the women are pulling on him, the cold air is hitting the battery. What happens at 6:15? You're going to see the video. You've seen it, still photos. Carrie Roberts goes over, picks up the phone. Not only does she pick up the phone, she puts it in her pocket, and then 20 minutes later, the next meeting, the temperature rises. That's not convenient. That's not a coincidence. That's fact. That's data. And then the phone is passed, put in a warm environment, and it raises up. 6:15. How can someone conspire to pick up a phone on the side of the yard that was under Mr. O'Keefe's body at 6:15 and know the battery temperature was then going to rise? And not only did the battery temperature rise, when you look at the healthcare data, at 6:15 when she picks up the phone, you know what happens to the healthcare data, right? It starts to move. It's data. It's data. So, while they're going through this duress, the defendant asked Jen McCabe for yet another favor. Look up hypothermia. Find out how long it takes for someone to die in a cold. And there's Ms. McCabe in her winter jacket, soccer mom, trying to help. She has MS, her hands aren't working, she's trying to type in what's happening during that time. It's a frantic scene. She tells you that. The defendant then wants to run back to the ambulance, so she goes with her and never finishes or completes the input. And then she tries it again. At 6:23, at 6:24. That's what this woman did that night, that morning. Not only for her friend, for her. For her. That's what she did. And what happens to her after? Because the timestamp, when you open the timestamp, It's at the time it's open, and she's in bed at 2:27 looking up Hockomock Sports because she is so interested in the kids' sports, and that timestamp stays open. And she goes to that tab the next morning when she puts in How Long to Die in Cold. And that is being portrayed that she's in a conspiracy. She gets vilified as a murderer, a soccer mom who came to help. It took Ian Whiffen 5 minutes to show you a live demonstration on how simple that works. That she's not deleting anything. Jessica Hyde told you it's automatic deletions over time. You usually can't delete that information. That's not a click and swipe like the good Dr. Wolf from Arca knows how to do. This can't be erased. But they still hold on to this. As they argue to you and all the injustices that have been done, they tell you, they want you to believe, or take a flyer on the fact that she looked up how long to die in the cold at 2:27. It is an absolute contrary to the science. There's no basis to support it, but they stand here in front of you. Why? Because every time they say something like that, you look the other way. Don't look at her. Look the other way. 2:27, look the other way. Don't look at what she did. Former Trooper Proctor, look the other way. Don't look at her. Every time they make those eyes, oh, she got the glass from inside the Albert. Maybe in the basement. Look the other way. Don't look the other way. Look at the facts. Look at the data. And it all leads to one person. There's no grand conspiracy. It leads to one person, the defendant. And it's not just the data and facts. It's her herself. Let's talk about Mr. Proctor. You were invoked with this emotion early in the opening that this is a cancer. That's a tough word. Trying to evoke that primal reaction, disgust. I'm not saying you shouldn't be disgusted by the text messages. You should. You should. They're not defensible. I don't stand here and defend impropriety. I don't. But that doesn't change the physical evidence, the scientific evidence, and the data. He was terminated. He paid a penalty. He was held responsible for what he did. He should have been. He should have been. But that doesn't get a free pass. That doesn't change the facts. It doesn't change the physical evidence. It doesn't change the science. It's unfortunate. It's distasteful. It's dishonorable. Remember, Trooper Bukenik was asked, was the investigation with honor and integrity? And he said it was. Was Trooper Proctor's effort honor and integrity? And he said, it was integrity. But he never said honor. That's a man of honor. Military service, dedicated to his country, highest level of clearances to the President of the United States, now a state trooper. He would not say that Trooper Proctor was honorable. Because he wasn't. He wasn't. But that does not change. It doesn't create a conspiracy. It doesn't invent a dog. It doesn't make somebody in a house something they're not. It just doesn't. When you read those text messages, they're hard to look at. It's unfair. It's unfair. And if there's a penalty more than being fired, well, maybe that penalty would be deserved. But it has nothing to do with the justice in this case. It just doesn't. There's not one piece of evidence, not one, that we can look at and say, this was tampered with. This was planted. This was distorted. Remember when we introduced the taillights at the beginning? I didn't introduce three of the taillights, but then the defense did, so I put them in. Those were taillights that were only found by Trooper Proctor. I did not put that evidence in. Understanding those text messages and appreciating the disdain one might have for his comments, not that there was any evidence of tampering, not that there was any evidence that it was not true, but I didn't put that evidence before you because we didn't need Trooper Proctor in this case. We don't need Trooper Proctor to prove this case beyond a reasonable doubt. That's why I didn't introduce that evidence to you. Now, there's been a lot of talk about planting of taillight. We know the taillight wasn't planted because Trooper Buchanan and Mr. Proctor did not go down to Dighton to see Ms. Reed until later in the afternoon. We know from the 507 video, we've seen that. We know the taillight was already missing when she's leaving the driveway. When the good Canton police detectives went to do a wellness check to care for those young children, and they went to the house, inadvertently, they didn't even know it, the dash cam captured the back of the car. The taillight packed with snow is missing. It's already gone. It can't be planted. At this point, Trooper Proctor's still in his pajamas. He's not even on the cage. He's not even on the scene. He hasn't been near the car. And in the Dighton videos themselves, when you close it, you take it at an angle and it moves, but if you get the right angle, you can see it's missing. It's gone. Can we have slide 18, please? You can play any angle you want, but if you look at this angle, it's gone. You know, plant is already gone. You know where it is? 34 Fairview Road, on at the refill. January 29th, 2022, 823. Look at the right-hand side. Look at the left-hand side. It's packed with snow. It's gone. It's gone. And the same thing when you do the videos, it's a different angle, a little smaller, but if you play that and watch the lights go up and down and slow it down, you'll see it expands. It's gone. So when you have Dighton Officer Barrows come in here and try to tell you what he saw in the solid floor, couldn't have been it. You got to ask yourself, what interest does he have coming in here in this case? A lot of attention on this case, a lot of people watching. Comes in after, of course, driving all the way out to the defense attorney's hotel to meet in a conference room so he can get a subpoena. He spends 2 hours driving up and back so that he can conveniently get a subpoena that tells him to appear, which he could have got by fax or in the mail. And so when he comes in, what he says is, that's absolutely not what I saw. Absolutely not. And then he claims at the last time he testified, he had made the same statement. I showed him his transcript. And did you see the redness creep over his face? He never said this before. In fact, he testified to the opposite. And so he sits on the stand with a new story after a meeting. We don't know why. But then I show him that bottom right photo with the snow, with it missing. And I say, is this the way it looked? It's, of course, before the snow melts out in the Sally Port so that you can see it unexposed. And he says, yes, he had to agree. This taillight was gone. There's no boogeyman. There's no plant. There's no Higgins at the Sally Port. There's no one tearing out pieces. In fact, remember I played you a clip, and you'll have it, where the defendant says, I was picking out pieces. It was crashed in. The bulb was showing when I was showing Kerry and Jen when they went back to Meadows. If you don't remember, listen to that clip. You'll hear it. Unfortunately, there's no ring video when they go back to Meadows. There's a ring video when she leaves. There's no ring video when she gets back. And so now when we're trying to look the other way, we want to find a dog bite. So enter Dr. Russell. Dr. Russell, according to her, nice woman, nice doctor, very accomplished. I respect that. She's the only dog expert in the world. The thing is, we know no idea what that expertise means. She volunteers for the job. She wants to be here, on her profile, but she can't explain the methodology. What are you looking for in a dog bite? She can't tell us. It starts a year ago that it's claws, it's teeth, and then it's claws, then it's teeth, then it's I don't know. And then when you look at each of the different parts of the abrasions, she says, well, I can't tell if I look at each one of them, but all together it's a dog bite. It's a dog attack. That is the masterful expertise that the defense has bragged about bringing in. Dr. Russell telling you, because she says this is a dog bite. She has never been in a forensic situation where she's looked at a wound and identified it as a dog bite before. This is the first time, the only time she's ever done it. And what she says is these are not punctures. Punctures means it goes into the skin, a wound. There's no punctures. And she's sure, because she's an expert, so you should rely on her because she's coming in saying she's an expert and she's being presented. Yet, after saying there's no punctures, Dr. Laposada comes in, and she sees punctures everywhere. It's an animal attack. It's a dog. Oh, is it? No method, no methodology, no history of this, no prior testimony that we know of other than arbitrarily what she says. And she says the exact opposite of Dr. Russell. Why is that? How does that happen? So obviously, there is no science to looking at an abrasion and saying where it came from. They give us no detail. They give us nothing that we should rely on. They contradict each other. It's just to get you to look the other way. And so we have now the issue of the defense has said over and over again, there's no collision. There's no collision. There's no collision. And they had a number of witnesses come in to try to say that. And they point to Dr. Scordibello, who works at the medical examiner's office. She tells you that she doesn't see injuries consistent with a collision. She's looking at this case for 90 days. 90 days. The evidence in this case did not stop. It continued for 2 years. She knows nothing about the data, nothing about the black box, nothing about the interviews of Ms. Reed. She doesn't know about the DNA. She doesn't know about the shards in the arm or in the clothes. Strike that, in the clothes. She knows nothing about that. So in 90 days, she didn't see any lower body injuries. She didn't see any lower extremity injuries, which are very common in car collisions. But that doesn't mean it didn't happen, because she, in 90 days, saw a fraction of the information. A fraction. And we know now, argument back and forth for days about lower body injuries, the suggestion is a car accident can affect everybody differently, depending on the angle, the scope, the speed. Some people can get plowed over by a car and have no injuries. Some people can get touched lightly and have more injuries. And there was the debate about no lower body injuries. Well, ARCA dispelled that in their dummy test, that you can have a collision with no lower body injuries. They did that for us. Thank you. And so the idea that at the time, in 90 days, that she doesn't have enough information to say consistent with a car accident doesn't mean there was no car accident. Let me talk a little bit about ARCA. I don't want to waste too much time with them. What expert who's supposed to come to you, they're not the arbiter of truth. Their opinions weigh no more than yours. Your common sense has more value than an expert's opinion. Their job is to assist you to explain what their expertise is, so that it's a tool for you so that you can make a decision. That's objectivity. We've heard words like confirmation bias, objectivity. Mr. Wolf got on the stand, and before we even started, you have to ask yourself, what expert has a court order for text messages and then deletes the text messages? What expert, what objective expert uses signal, an encrypted app, to communicate about the case? Never used it before, hasn't used it since. And so when he did his tests, he used a lower weight arm. Wasn't trying to bash him, wasn't trying to insult him, tried to get him just to recognize that a 9.38 pound arm is less weight than John O'Keefe's metric, which would be 11.8. That's all, and because it's a lighter arm, it takes more speed to create the same damage. I don't know science, I don't know math very well, but that's basic. It's basic, and he fought me over and over again. Did he seem objective that he was trying to help you? Because Dr. Rexel came in the next day and said, well, you have to adjust for that. That's all I asked him for an hour, about adjusting, just like Judge Welcher adjusted. Do you adjust it? And he tried to talk to me like I was making something up. His own colleague had to admit it. Now, it's funny, he admitted it before he got through his credentials. No sequestration order violations. Nobody was coaching him, but he knew enough to come in at the beginning and get right on that point. And speaking of sequestration, remember Dr. Russell on her limo ride over? If Brendan asks you a question, make sure you ask for a transcript. Impede the progress. Slow down the questioning. Interfere. Sequestration order is so there's fundamental fairness for all witnesses, not just some. And so what happens with Dr. Renshaw, we don't know. But we do know he comes in here and he tells you that he was not getting information that was helping him the last time he testified. He insisted. I asked him 5 times, was he getting information that would help him in his testimony? Not from the defense, from his former employer. And he said, no, no, no. And at the end of the examination, he reads his transcript and it's yes, yes, yes. And he tells us that he's independent and objective. I asked him about a luncheon, not a big deal, just asking him about it. And he says, I have a sandwich and I stand in the corner until I remind him that we got video footage from a documentarian and he's in one of the scenes. And then things change. So when you talk about objectivity and who to trust, they can come in and say, Judd Welcher said this and that. It doesn't make it so. Judd Welcher, Dr. Welcher, never in any report, in any presentation, in any testimony to you, ever suggested this is how it happened. This was how his arm was. This is how his feet was. He was trying to show whether or not the orientation. Could this happen with the angle, with the height, That's all that test was. It was no more. But what they do is they reposture it, repackage it, and say it means this when it doesn't, and we're going to show you why it's not that, therefore we win. That's all that is. It's semantics. Judd Welcher, Dr. Welcher, never suggested that. And his work on text stream data, unassailable. And so what we have, inevitably, is we have a timeline that never moves, data that never changes, physical evidence that can't be put in that spot without a collision. We have, inevitably, proof, without any doubt, that on January 29, 2022, Ms. Reed was with Mr. O'Keefe, and she got drunk. She drank. She was 2 to 3 times over the legal limit. And they went to a party, an after party, and they were fighting. They were fighting. It was a relationship in decline. And he got out of the car, and he had a brief window of life left. And when he got out, and she drove away, she couldn't let it go. Get drunk, she hit him, she left him to die. It's that simple. We don't know exactly how this collision happened, but we have a good idea from the physical evidence, and we know that it happened. Can someone have a collision without lower body injuries? Could I have slide 19, please? You bet they can. We don't know if this is the body position. We don't know if this is the exact speed, but what it tells us, this is viable. Look at the debris field. Look at his turn. Remember his sneaker on that curb that got lodged against the sneaker? Mr. O'Keefe then falls back, hits his head, counter coup, left to die. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, there is no doubt what happened that night. There is no doubt who did it. You have a very difficult task ahead of you when you consider the evidence and you consider the law. Very difficult. There are 3 charges. There is second-degree murder. Ms. Reed, when she chose to drive back at Mr. O'Keefe in that night with a 6,000-pound Lexus, in that anger, 75%, whether she meant to hit him or not, didn't mean to kill him, she hit him. Strengths. It is a plain and strong likelihood of death. You would never get back down your driveway if your kids were at the end of the driveway. You'd say, well, you're going to kill somebody? You would never do it because you would expect, if you drove at them at that speed, that someone would die. That's second-degree murder. OUI manslaughter, she's drunk, she was reckless. She doesn't even have to know she hit him. She doesn't even have to know she hit him. But she did. She did. And she left a man who was kind and generous and thoughtful. She left him alone. She left him alone to die. Could I have slide 22, please? He is not an it. John O'Keefe is not a body. John O'Keefe was not a buffalo on a prairie. John O'Keefe was a person. And he was murdered by Karen Reed.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Get ready for July 4th with early savings at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off 2 or more select major appliances. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
Get ready for July 4th with early savings at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's. We help you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
I can't tell you how often I hear, oh, I'm a little OCD. I like things neat. That's not OCD. I'm Howie Mandel, and I know this because I have OCD. Actual OCD causes relentless unwanted thoughts. What if I did something terrible and forgot? What if I'm a bad person? Why am I thinking this terrible thing? It makes you question absolutely everything, and you'll do anything to feel better. OCD is debilitating, but it's also highly treatable with the right kind of therapy. Regular talk therapy doesn't cut it. OCD needs specialized therapy. That's why I want to tell you about NoCD. NoCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for OCD. Their licensed therapists provide specialized therapy virtually, and it's covered by insurance for over 155 million Americans. If you think you might be struggling with OCD, visit NoCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call and learn more. That's NoCD.com.
Get ready for July 4th with early savings at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
Get ready for July 4th with early savings at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's. We help you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
Get ready for July 4th with early savings at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's. We help you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
Get ready for July 4th with early savings at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's. We help you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on South High Street in Columbus.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.